Hello and welcome to the Wabi Sabi series podcast, unlikely conversations on uncomfortable topics. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, a corporate exec turned author who has recently written a series of books about topics we don't often talk about. Things like death, grief, not having kids, and the unexplained power doctors often wield over us. Apparently, some of my books have made some people feel a little uncomfortable, but I felt that I wanted to have far more conversations around weird, wonderful, and sometimes taboo topics. So I reached out to some interesting people and asked them just one question. If there is one topic that you'd love society to talk more about, what would it be and why? And what they've shared with me has been amazing. So let's dive in and see where the conversation takes us.
The people that are in your circle, family, friends, that are your loved ones, they should be the ones that are clapping for you the loudest. There should be no jealousy, no ulterior motives.
Tina Tower is an absolute powerhouse and one of the most frank, open, and generous entrepreneurs I've ever met. She works with experienced businesswomen to package their accrued knowledge and passion into profitable online courses. As a business strategist, Tina loves helping women to realize their dreams. This comes after 16 years as a business owner, where she started her own tutoring center franchise at age 20, no less, and built the business to over 30 locations before exiting in a seven-figure deal. Nice. Tina also hosts a fabulous podcast called Her Empire Builder and has been featured on the Today Show, Sky Business, Financial Review, and has won the Australian Business Champion Award and Telstra Young Businesswoman Award of the Year. Tina recently released her first book, which I can attest is a fantastic read, One Life, How to Have the Life of Your Dreams. Tina, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on here today, so welcome.
Thanks, Michelle. Hello.
So I kick straight in and ask you just one question. If there is a topic that you'd like everyone to talk more about, what would it be?
Big question. And the one I chose was removing toxic people from your life.
Whoa, that's pretty heavy. I love it. Okay, so fantastic. Well, talk to me about that. There's clearly a few stories in there and this is going to be awesome.
So I haven't spoken to my family for many, many, many years. I had quite a tumultuous childhood. And I know when I talk to a lot of other people and they find out that I'm disconnected from my family, there's shock and usually some judgment there. But what I find is for a lot of people, if they actually eliminated the toxicity out of their life, our lives can be a whole lot simpler and a whole lot more joyous and easy. And I know everyone has their struggles and up and down, and I'm not saying whenever anyone upsets you, just cut them off. But for really dramatic, serious things, I don't know why people tolerate having people in their lives that are bringing them down all the time.
Such a great topic, and I couldn't agree more with you. And I think it took me years to actually be brave enough to do that. And it was only a couple of years ago that I started to do that in like personal and in a family sense. But how old were you when you first sort of started removing yourself from your family? And was there a key catalyst? What was the kind of key points with that? If it obviously was toxic for a while?
Yeah, lots. And there was kind of like the final catalyst. I know we've got limited time, so there's only so many stories that I can tell. But for me, I knew very early that my family was not like other families. So I left home when I was 13, which I talk a bit about in my book, One Life.
Yeah, the story in the book's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, but I always kind of had this feeling that, you know, the way that the environment was not right. But at the same time, my mum was my mum, and you love your mum and you want the approval from your mother and your father and all of those sorts of things. So I kept coming back again and again and again and again. And for me, it wasn't really until I had my own children that I started going, I love them so much that I literally could burst. I will do anything in the world for these children. And the thought of ever harming them physically, emotionally, any of it, I could not get my head around. And it was really only then that I was like, that is completely fucked up. Completely. It was after that point that I really started questioning and pulling back a little bit and going, I love my kids so much. How on earth could you treat your child in that way? And so after that, I started pulling back, and that caused even more problems. And then the biggest catalyst came about 7 or 8 years ago now, when I was visiting my parents. I come from a big family, so I have 5 brothers. I am the black sheep of my family, so which is good that I'm the black sheep in the family that I have. But 2 of my brothers are in jail, and it's just, you know, they're not good people. And so I was down there, and my brother hit his 2-year-old son. And so obviously I started giving a bit of, you know, you can't do that, and what is wrong with you, and all of the sorts of things that any normal human would do. And he grabbed me and slammed me onto the ground and grazed all my face with his hands around my neck. And my 2 kids were there. They were at the time 4 and 3, I think, something around that. And they're screaming for me, going, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." And, you know, I was trying to get up and go. And then when I finally got out of it and I grabbed my kids and I ran, and my mum was just up from where we were, and I had tears just streaming down my face and just going, "He just did this. This is totally not acceptable. I will not put up with this anymore." That whole thing. And she turned around and went, "Oh, Tina, you are always making a mountain out of a molehill." And I was just like, you know what? Can't do this anymore. Can't do it. So I was always treated like, I always had things said to me like, you know, I just think I'm better than everybody else. I think my shit don't stink. All of these types of things, because I pushed back against the norm of doing things. But it kind of, in that moment, I realized that it's a good thing to push back against things like that. And weirdly, or not weirdly, I guess, when I look at it, but when I made that break and I've then had no contact, my whole life has changed. My success levels went through the roof in the 12 months after that as a direct result.
It sounds like, in terms of that, you know, constantly being made to feel you're not good enough, you know, from your family members and stuff. No wonder, you know, your confidence would have been taking a beating. And once you sort of remove that from your life and just got on with it, you've just soared, you know, constantly, huh?
Yeah, I know a lot of people that I work with that come from really loving, supportive, encouraging families that have issues of not feeling enough. It's something we have as naturally inherent, a horrible human trait that's in there. But a lot of people are actually explicitly told, "You're not good enough. You can't do this. You're not a good human."
If you have a topic burning inside you that you'd love to talk more about and have a conversation with me, I'd love to hear from you. So drop me a line at hello@wabisabiseries.com. Let's head back to the chat. So I want to just dig in a bit there on some of that stuff. And when you first, I mean, obviously there was a significant catalyst there, as you say, and mine's not dissimilar. It was when I put up with so much stuff from, you know, it's happened 2 different cases from these people. And then it wasn't until they'd actually impacted my husband. So I put up with it for years and years, but once they did the wrong thing by Dennis, I was like, right, that's it. And so it was probably interesting that your children were there, and to see that sort of behavior might've been a different set of catalyst with you as well, I imagine. And it's hard and unfortunate that it has to take that, but sometimes that is it. So I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah, it's completely like that. I mean, there's when it happens to you on and you get used to that level of trauma and you get to expect it and almost feel like you deserve it in a way. But then if something happens to the people that you love and you go, well, they don't deserve that, it makes you see it through a whole different light. But it's only when you really separate from that that you realize that the people that are in your circle, family, friends, that are your loved ones, they should be the ones that are clapping for you the loudest. They should be the ones that are cheering you on. There should be no jealousy, no ulterior motives. Like, that just shouldn't even be there.
Well, they know what you've come from, right? They know how hard you've worked because of where you've come from to get there. You would think that's the way, but it's often not. And I don't know how you felt about this, but the other thing, you know, one, there's the element of, I know that this person's not good for me. And so mine is a couple of some family members that I felt that I've given so much, you know, all my life. I give a, you know, 180% and they give 20% back. And I actually got to the point to say, actually, it's not, I've been blaming them for my whole life, but it's actually my fault. I let them treat me this way. So I need to actually be accountable. And that was the way I kind of flipped it in my head to get through that. The other one in terms of people that I grew up with, and, you know, I met these girls when I was like 9 or 10 or whatever, and you go through your life and you've known them your whole life, but actually you change a lot and you grow and develop, and often you grow apart, but you always have that thinking that you should be mates forever. And then I kind of got to a point where I was like, I don't get anything from this relationship. I'm always the one ringing and following up and trying to make sure they're okay, and I get nothing back. And then when we'd all go out, I would just sort of get treated not, you know, really particularly well. And I was like, I have so many amazing people in my life that I don't have time for. So why am I putting up with this shit? And why do I make time for these people that are not good? They're not good for me. They might be great for others, but there was always that guilt factor and feeling, you know, like I can't cut them off, you know, in that sense, and then feeling guilty about that. So how have you navigated that, or how did you feel?
It's horrible. I don't think it goes away. I mean, I know every year on, like, we've just had Mother's Day recently, I spend all day battling, should I give it another go? But there's a kind of thing that you get burnt that many times that, and as you said with the catalyst, like, I've got 50 stories like that, you know, it's not just the one thing. There was, I'll tell you another
story that broke the camel's back, right? That was it.
Yeah. That will kind of give you an indication around the guilt factor. So my father, so my parents got divorced when I was one, they both got remarried. And so when I left home, when I was 13, I went to my father's house. That was not a good experience. And we've kind of never been close. And then he tried to come back into my life when I got older, like in my 30s. And I thought, you know what? I would love to have family. I really don't like that I don't have that close family. And I see people that have that level of safety and security and that trust with their family. I think, oh my God, that'd be the most beautiful thing ever. And so he came and visited me. He came over, it was my birthday, and I had a party, and he is an alcoholic and got completely drunk in front of everybody, told everyone how much he loves me, how proud he is of me. I haven't spoken to him for 15 years. At this point, I'm just going, oh my gosh. And then looks at me and says, you know what, if I ever saw your mother walk down the street, I'd just get a gun and I'd shoot her through the eyes. And all this stuff, I'm just going, this is your one shot. I've let you back in the door, and this is how you choose to behave. Anyway, the next day he then disappeared. So didn't say goodbye, just literally left, didn't answer any calls, like was gone. I didn't hear from him again for 3 years later, where he then said he'd got help for the first time in his life. He'd gone to AA and wasn't drinking anymore and was trying to make amends. And we had a couple of phone calls. And in the end, every time I saw his name come up on the phone, or every time I heard his voice, just one word, and my whole adrenal system would just go into overdrive, and I would get off the phone and sob, and it was just my undoing. And in the end, I had to go, you know what, out of wanting to do the right thing, I can't do it because it's just going to derail my whole being. And so sometimes we have to, like you said at the beginning, take the brave step and go, we can do the right things for ourselves. And that doesn't make us selfish, it doesn't make us brutal, it means we have boundaries and we're giving ourselves the best chance to thrive as humans. And I know in the case of my parents, both them and me lead better lives when we don't have that thrown into the one mix, because we explode.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful way to look at it. I think the way you've described that, and to me, it came to a, you know, a form of self-preservation. And I think, you know, I sort of said it before, was one, you know, like I sort of had an expectation of these people to be a certain way, and they weren't performing in that way. And so I had to look at it and go, that's actually not their fault. They are who they are. You know, these are adults, they're not kids. So they are, and they're actually probably quite happy in their lives. And to your point, we just had outgrown each other, or in the sense of family, just because you're blood doesn't mean you have to get on. And I think that's the dilemma. And I think this is probably, you know, getting to the crux of the stuff that we all feel guilty about, is that we feel compelled that, you know, your brothers, sisters, mother, father, you know, grandparents, whatever, because they are your blood, you must all get on and you must love each other. And because that's what, you know, like family's supposed to be like. I think it was interesting. I remember hearing a term years ago when I met a number of people that had spoke at an event and they'd suffered some, you know, pretty horrendous violence, you know, either sexual, emotional, physical from their parents. And it was horrendous to hear that because I grew up in, you know, what I deemed as a really loving, caring family, but my mum didn't really know how to show love because she'd had such a tough mother, you know, didn't really know what an iconic, like an ideal mother sort of hood was. So she never used to hug us, kiss us or any of that sort of stuff. Whereas my dad was very affectionate, but I thought that was normal as well. And I remember these people saying at this seminar, they're like, a fish doesn't realize it's in a fishbowl. And so every kid growing up in their family thinks that that's normal. You know, you might go and stay at someone else's place or whatever and go, oh, that's a bit different. But as a kid, you're growing up in those environments. And I think that's the key thing in terms of getting as, you know, as you get older and an adult and go, that's not cool behavior. And I don't actually have to put up with it. So how would you recommend for people to extract themselves? You know, any sort of tips in that? And you know, what's the best way to manage it? And to your point that it is tough and those key moments where you do feel guilty, how do you kind of navigate that as well?
It's the guilt and the sad as well. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think my parents did the best they knew how. And I give massive amounts of credit in going, I can deal with situations that so many people struggle with, that I have so much resilience in me and strength that I'm very grateful for that. And I think that that's a really good way to get over it, is to be able to recognize the good parts, but know that engaging in the relationship further doesn't really serve you. I mean, like, to get back to your analogy of the fish in the fishbowl, when we become adults and we get exposed to the rest of the world, like, we see that, but still when we see our parents, we revert to our childlike selves. There's so much emotion that gets carried around the rest of our lives. And
actually, there's a lot of research about that and about where you sit, you know, whether you're the fourth child, the first child, all that. There's a fascinating reading if you're interested in that sort of stuff, because it says that as you doesn't matter whether you go and be, you know, the CEO of a top bank, you'll come back into your family. If you're kid number three, you get treated like as if, you know, you don't know anything or whatever. It's fascinating, actually.
And there can be positives to that, but when it triggers you in all the right ways, it's not a great thing. But I've seen many psychologists through the years in dealing with all of this sort of stuff that we had going on. And, you know, I had one once that said, you've got this preconception, especially once I became a mother, of what a mother means and how you should be treated. And that's never going to happen. You can never rewrite the history, and she's never going to turn around and go, Tina, I'm so proud of you. I love you so much. That's just never going to happen. And so battling that on and on and always having these expectations that are never going to be met, because that's just not the reality of the situation, you then have to really look at it and make the decision of going, can you accept that person for who they are? And if you can't, walk away. It's probably better for you and it's better for them, because how horrible must it be for her to never live up to my expectations of what a mother should be as well? So it's not good for either of us. And so it's better to kind of, in my situation, definitely to send that love and light, but from a distance, and be grateful for the parts that she instilled. I mean, I'm the only girl with five boys. And so a lot being raised was, from her point of view, she didn't want me to be what she called a useless girl. She saw all of these really useless girls and all of these handy boys. But there's a lot I can do in life because I was taught that and I had that expectation. So there's always the positives to every negative.
Yeah, but you're a consummate optimist though. And so, you know, like, you've obviously essentially, you're in an abusive relationship, you know, in terms of growing up in that environment, which is not great. But I imagine that's probably driven you to be even, you know, a better mum, I guess, and actually you're an amazing mother. But, you know, is that an element that you think has really brought that in, and why you are such a close-knit family, your husband and your kids as well?
Most definitely. Absolutely, 100%. There's sometimes where I go, I really have to pull back because I'm smothering the crap out of my kids. And I go, like, sometimes, like, I'll look at them and I'll go, you know how much I love you, right? I just think you as a human is just the greatest thing. They're like, Mom, you've told me like 25 times today. I'm like, I just never want you to question that.
But the beautiful thing is, they've probably had a chance to read or understand your book and stuff and the stories. You're so open about that. So they know why you feel that way and you feel compelled to share.
Yeah, and they're very aware of the whole situation. I mean, I'm really close to my grandma and she lives with my mum, and she's 93 years old and went into hospital a couple months ago, and my mum called to tell me, and it's the first time I'd heard her voice in like 5-6 years. And so I walk around the world every day thinking I'm a very put together, very level-headed, capable, strong woman. Phone rings, unknown number, I answer, I hear my mum's voice. Within 20 seconds, I'm like hyperventilating, sobbing. Didn't even know there was anything wrong with my grandma yet, just could not handle how quickly that happened. And that's the same for a lot of people, like a lot of people that are in those situations. There's so much that triggers in that. But I know that while I'm over it in the sense of, you know, I've accepted what happened and what that meant for my life, I can very much move on and live a fantastic life knowing that that was part of it. But as soon as it triggers, it's like, and it comes up in all sorts of ways. You know, when I was in business doing different things, if people attacked me in a certain way, it would bring up a whole heap of stuff, and I had to keep recognizing that and remember, no, that's that situation, this is this situation.
Some fabulous ways there for people to navigate that. But there have been some circumstances, I know, with mates that have tried to extract themselves from situations or from people, and the other person just won't let go. And they, you know, it's one thing to sort of, like you and I, we've separated with the people and we've kind of managed that and have no contact, you know, on our own terms, I guess. What would you say to someone that is trying to navigate that and the other person just, you know, is bad for them, but thinks that they're okay and like a toxic person, and then just keeps saying, well, you know, why haven't you called me, or why, you know, why don't you respond to my messages on Facebook and whatever?
Yeah, I got that. I got all of that. I mean, there was once I went down, I think it was my grandma's 88th birthday or something like that, and I had timed it so I could go there when nobody was home. And when I went back, my mum was there, and she like ran onto the driveway and threw herself in front of my car, yelling at me and wouldn't let the car go. Like, it's just, but the door has to stay closed. So unfortunately, she's blocked on all my social media, on all everything. The numbers are blocked. Like, there's just no possible way to get through. I mean, it's the same in a small sense, like in kind of like a totally different sense. There was like one friend that I had that we kind of met through business that I could tell very clearly that she wanted to be friends with me for very different reasons and didn't want the best for me. And there was a whole lot of weird like bitchiness going on and all sorts of things, and like I unfriended on Instagram, and the amount of upheaval that was caused by that. So, you know, it's not an easy thing, and then you feel like an asshole when you cut people off as well. There's no getting around that.
Well, that's what I wanted to dig into, right? Because that's the thing. But actually, as having done it, both, I mean, yours is way more extreme than mine, but these people I used to stress about all the time, and I used to feel like I was being an asshole anyway. And so then I was like, you know what? I just don't need that angst in my life. And then removing it, and then actually I was like, well, they are now free to live their life as they wish, and I'm really happy for them. And it's just that our paths no longer need to cross, and I'm okay with that. And so I think I sort of really had to talk myself through, you know, how I'm going to manage this, and actually, you know, as you say, send them love and light. And I genuinely do that, and I genuinely want them to be happy. I have no malice anymore with it. I'm just like, actually, we just, you know, it's like the old dating situation. It's not you, it's me. It's just, can't be together anymore.
You know, there's enough stress in the world. Life is hard enough as it is without putting up with something that, you know, is unsafe for you emotionally. And you can choose joy. I think be brave enough to choose joy.
So are there key elements that you would encourage people to try with that, like in terms of reframing things, or some tips and tricks that you've used over the years that, you know, can assist with that process?
Like from a lesser sense, mine was to the point where it's pretty severe that you couldn't really communicate. But if it's ever happened in a lesser sense, in talking to people and going, these are my expectations of what I want from a relationship, this is how I want to be treated, this is how we deserve to treat each other, is that something that you want to adapt to, take on board? And if it's not, then literally make it a very simple, let's part ways. I just think it doesn't have to be as complicated as a lot of people make it out to be. I mean, I know I've talked to a lot of domestic violence victims through my time, and I know with a lot of people that are going through DV that they feel like getting away from that situation is just not an option. And so in that situation, you know, if anyone's in that sort of environment, it's finding people that can help to give that perspective and to help know that you don't deserve to be in that situation. No one deserves to be in that situation. And so I do think we have to have enough self-love to be able to go, we can choose the path that's going to make us happy, and we don't have to suffer through people treating us poorly.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, obviously something I talk about in my death book is around ensuring that you're living life to the full, because we're not here for a long time. So it is so important that we do live a life that's true to us. And I think that's the thing that I had to learn, was that, you know, there's people that come in and out of your life throughout your life, and that's okay. And some of them are amazing, beautiful humans that you kind of go, you remember back and go, oh God, that chick was amazing. How did I lose contact? You know, so it's funny that that stuff happens. But, you know, and sometimes these toxic people come in to teach you something, but doesn't mean you have to have them in your life forever, even if they are blood relatives. So I think that's kind of the message, the key message today, which is a beautiful one from you, is, you know, choose your own path and choose joy, as you're saying, to ensure that, you know, you live the life that's true to you, right?
Yeah, that's 100% what it is. You summed it up beautifully, Michelle.
Well, Tina, it's been awesome to talk to you today. Thank you for being so open and honest, as you always are, and sharing your really personal stories with us as well.
Yeah, it's strange to be on a podcast not talking about business.
I know. See, I love to share. I love to give you a little bit of a different element. So beautiful. Well, we'll see you soon. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to learn more about today's guest, you'll find all the show notes and interesting links on our website, wabizabiseries.com. If you'd like to hear more unexpected conversations, please subscribe to the series, follow us on our socials, or grab one of my books. And if you're in a generous mood, I'd love you to share the episode, or maybe even rate, review, and comment on the series. It really does make a difference. Until next time, be sure to claim your own piece of wabi-sabi and walk proud in your perfect imperfection.